Tom Gimbel joins us now, the founder and CEO at LaSalle Network. If ever there was a story for you to talk about, Tom, it is this one. Amazon will now fire workers. Amazon will fire workers who refuse to return to the office 3 days a week. What's your thought about that, Tom?
Well, I think number one, we should fire Congress for going into the office.
Yes.
I think number two, in all seriousness on the Amazon thing, is I think that I have two thoughts. Number one is pre-COVID, if somebody would have said to everybody, you can work in the office 3 days a week and work home 2 days a week, they would have signed that contract in blood for life, number one. Number two, I think that if the employer wants you to be in the office, you go into the office.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. Even if, I mean, whether or not that's a good policy is beside the point. It's the policy.
Correct.
So, you know, whose name is on the check and it's not yours. So they get to make the rules.
100%. The fact that there's any other debate on this is absolutely insane to me, is that somebody's has a job for you. They're telling you where the job is. You can take the job and go into work, or you can quit. It's not really that hard. They're not firing you. You're quitting. And I think that's the funny thing to me, is they're telling you where the job is, and if you don't want to go there, you're saying you're quitting. It's not even fired. You're quitting. If you don't go there, you're quitting.
I wonder, though, do you have an opinion about if I work from home, maybe I'm more efficient? Maybe my going into work once every 2 weeks.
It's irrelevant, John. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's if your babysitter says that taking your kid from your house to their house is better for them and it makes them a better babysitter, you say, I don't want that. I want the kid at my house. This is he or she who has the gold makes the rules. And if the boss wants you to be in, they're not asking you to work in a dungeon. They're not asking you to work in a factory with no lights and a leaky roof. They're asking you to come in where everybody will be gathering for brainstorming sessions. A lot of these places offer free meals. They do all these things, and this is the epitome of the entitlement society that has been created over the past 4 years, and the big companies are saying enough.
I wonder, though, if this is maybe not the epitome of that, in that Amazon, my understanding is, I've never worked there, and we're not talking about in a warehouse now. We're talking about the white-collar workers at Amazon, that is a demanding, weird, pressurized, maybe sexist place, that it's one of those places where, hey, we're just asking you to come in 4 days a week or 5 days a week. They're asking you to really do a lot when you're there. I'm almost done. And they're asking you to do a lot when you're at home. You know, and I only say all of that because I listen to a podcast. I'm getting the book called Exit Interview. It's about a woman who worked in management at Amazon for, 9 years, left recently. And now she's writing about what the work environment was like at Amazon. And she just said, it's one of those places where they own your soul. So I guess that's what I'm trying to just offer to you, Tom.
Totally. And there's people that don't like playing for the New England Patriots and who don't like coaching under Nick Saban and working at Northwestern Hospital. And, you know, every environment that has a culture has people who love it and people who hate it. That's just that you can't have everybody loves everything. It's smoke and mirrors. It's too good to be true. And I think that look at WeWork. Everybody loved WeWork. And then you see the behind the scenes and they didn't love it. And I think the fact that Amazon, it's no secret for people applying for a job at Amazon what the culture's like. And you don't, it's almost like people feel that someone's making them take the job. No one's forced. We're not in a police state. No one's making somebody work at Amazon. There are lots of other jobs you can go do. Unemployment's at 3.8%, John. No one's forced to do anything in this country for work, for income, ever.
Any last thoughts about that part of the conversation before I ask you about LinkedIn and some layoffs?
Yeah, I just think it should be phrased differently, that employees are saying that they will quit if they are asked to come to the office.
It says here LinkedIn lays off nearly 700 employees, and Microsoft announced in January it was cutting 10,000 employees, and additional ones will follow in July. The slimming down comes as Microsoft's overall revenue growth has slipped, They say they've got to lower their costs. LinkedIn announced Monday that it will cut almost 700 employees, with most coming from the engineering organization, according to a memo viewed by CNBC. I guess this is inevitable. We've been talking. I wonder if this is just related to the pending recession, or what's your thought about that, Tom?
I think there was a lot of candidate hoarding going on, and what I mean by that is a lot of big tech companies, of which those are both, were hiring engineers on a cycle every year, every 6 months. They were continually hiring developers. And so the assumption was the economy would keep going at like a rocket ship that it was in 21 and 22. And in reality, it wasn't. There was a lot of COVID rebound. And so they're overstaffed just for where the growth is. And so the good news is there's a lot of companies that are hiring. There's a lot of startups. There's small and medium-sized companies. But what we've seen with Oracle, with Microsoft, with LinkedIn, with Google, et cetera, is just overhiring by big companies that thought that the ride would never end.
Yeah, Amazon has over 1 million employees, which is just hard to get your head around. And I have heard about what you're talking about, that some of these companies would just be hiring because they knew they needed people, and yet they didn't know exactly what they were going to do with you when they got you. And some of these employees would then go on social media saying, I've been working for 9 months for Company X. I really don't do hardly anything, and I'm making, you know, $180,000 a year or something like that. It's crazy.
Correct. Correct. And so now you have a situation where, you know, people say it's not fair that, you know, there's downsizing and there's no company loyalty. But at the same time, when people were getting paid and not doing a lot, they loved taking the money. I just think, you know, I've been doing this since 96, and I've seen the dot-com bubble grow and burst. I've seen the 2008 recession, the pandemic, what have you. And it's the times change, but the story's the same. And the story is companies hire people. They end up having a few more people than they need. The employees get a little fat and happy and lazy and take advantage of that situation. The company's profits drop. They fire the people. Then you go through a cycle where everybody's working hard, and then you get to a point where you hire more people. But it's a cycle and a balance, and some companies are good at it and some are not.
But are you seeing a coming wave, Tom, of additional layoffs? I mean, the idea is if interest rates are as high as they are and higher longer are the buzzwords out of the Fed, that'll freeze up capital for businesses that might otherwise be expanding or hiring, and it'll trickle down to somebody like you who will notice fewer jobs for your potential candidates. So all of that to say, are you seeing that starting to load up more?
No, we're not seeing it yet. I think what's going on is we're seeing the government prop up a lot of industries and jobs. And what I mean by that is with the infrastructure bill and the $1.5 trillion that got passed a few years back, there's construction companies that have just moved from doing private construction to public construction. And there's business that trickles down out of there into other areas. We've seen, you know, healthcare that was not growing at all during COVID. Now with elective procedures back is growing. So I think it's just a movement of the yardstick right now. And so I don't think it'll be big tech laying people off. I get that. That makes a lot of sense. What we have now, John, that we've never had before is this constant entrepreneurial boom. And what I mean by that is it was 40, 50 years ago to open your own company and manufacture products, and there wasn't e-commerce and distribution. There was a lot of capital needed. Now with app developers and so much of it being technology-based, there's more entrepreneurial startups than ever before, which means there's more companies in the small and medium-sized businesses that can hire people when they're laid off from big companies. And so you have these different trends that allows that I don't think we're going to have a recession that affects labor at the likes that we saw in 2008. I don't think that's going to happen.
If you got trade skills, this is a good time to be looking for a job, isn't it?
Oh, I think that this is a time that we need people to be honest with themselves, their parents, their significant others, and what have you, that if you like being in the trades, it's a great time to do it. And AI and intelligence and machine learning, it's not going to take away plumbers and craftsmen and things like that there's always a need for the trades. And I think that that's a really good thing for our economy.
But you don't work with employers looking for those kind of employees so much, do you?
No, we do some consulting and advisory for our clients that are looking for that, so we can be a conduit for it, but that's not, we don't derive any revenue from
it.
Well,
the bulk of the positions that you do fill or aid in filling, where are those jobs? What kind of jobs are those?
So those are all white collar. On the lower end, it's call centers and customer service. We move into help desk on the IT side, but we do marketing, sales, supply chain, accounting, technology, healthcare revenue cycle. So we do mostly white collar positions in small to medium sized companies, but we do some enterprise stuff. And so, you know, we have multi-billion dollar companies, John, that are still hiring. I think it's still a healthy economy. It's an interesting because companies are still hiring. The salaries just aren't as inflated as they were 2 years ago.
Well, I don't think that the object of the game is to create unemployment, but that will be a consequence of what the Fed is trying to do here.
Oh, I disagree. I think that's exactly what the Fed wants to do. I think the Fed wants to have unemployment creep up and get it to about 5.5% to 6%, and that will level off the inflation versus having it go to 9% and being in a recession or being where it is now and having inflation. I disagree. I think the Fed wants a pop in the unemployment numbers.
Well, and what I'm trying to say is that a pop in the unemployment numbers will be a consequence of what the Fed is trying to do, which is lower interest rates. And it's too bad that one of the things then we have to anticipate that what I'm asking you about is, hey, so are we seeing, you know, fewer jobs? Are we seeing higher unemployment? That's almost a good thing, but really we're not rooting for that. What we're rooting for is lower interest rates.
Yeah, but the only way you get to low, so here's the challenge.
I want my cake and I want to eat it too, Tom.
Yes, you do, and you're going to have it all over your shirt when you're done, John. I think, you know, Governor Newsom in California is a great example of that situation you just described, is that he wants to say he's to calm down inflation, but he wants to pay fast food workers $25 an hour. Well, those are exact opposites. The more you pay people, when it comes in huge amounts and increases like we've done the past 3 years, the higher inflation goes. And you can't do both. You can't take people from $10 an hour to $25 and then think that everything's going to stay, the cost of goods are going to stay the same. And so this is a case of politicians telling people you can have your cake and eat it too, and you can't.
Tom Gimble for president says 815-773 texted in and didn't say that. Okay, it's nice to talk to you as always, Tom. We appreciate your insight. Stay well.
Stay healthy. Talk to you next week.
This is WGN. Here's Amelia Howard. She is the executive director of Clarendale Six Corners. Let's talk about this new high-rise. Amelia, thanks for joining us. You're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, John. Thank you so much for having me today. I'm very excited to be here with you.
Where is Clarendale Six Corners?
Well, Clarendale is located on the northwest side of Chicago in a beautiful neighborhood called Portage Park, right around the Irving Park Road, Cicero area. And we have built a new community that we are the catalyst for area's economic resurgence.
How so? What's all about this complex?
Well, we are Chicago's newest senior retirement community, and we offer independent living, assisted living, and memory care. And how we stand out is that, like you said, John, we are a high rise. We have 10 floors with some of the most beautiful, breathtaking skyline views.
I saw a report that said that people who retire or live in a complex such as yours in an urban area tend to do better than people that retire to a senior living facility in a rural area. I suppose you saw that too.
We did. A recent study from MIT found that moving to urban areas can actually increase the longevity among older adults, mainly because you're able to enjoy a walkable lifestyle provided by the city. Being able to be close to restaurants and businesses and areas tends to keep you pretty young.
Yeah, I've seen some of them that are kind of out in the rural areas, and sometimes they're not even in the middle of the town. They're on the outskirts of town, and it, strikes me as kind of sad. If that works for y'all, I'm happy for you. But I see your point. So describe this to me. How tall, how many units? Is it up and running now?
Yes, we are up and running, guys. We've been open for about 90 days. Like I said, we have 10 floors, and we have independent living, where we offer a luxury lifestyle full of amenities.
So give me a tour. What do you all do there? What do you have?
We have a beautiful outdoor terrace on our fourth floor, John. We have two gourmet dining restaurants with also we have a bistro as well and a marketplace, all within the community. We have a full-service salon, a movie theater, art studios. We also offer valet, so there is heated parking. As we know, Chicago has a, you know, concern with parking, and we are a very pet-friendly community. One thing that we're very proud of is our fine dining that we offer within the community.
I got an idea. My parents live in a facility, not yours. And I don't think my parents, they're in no position to take care of any animals right now. it's enough for them to take care of themselves. But I was thinking if where my parents stay, there was a house pet, you know, if on their floor there was a cat or dog, that would be a good idea.
Most definitely. We're very pet friendly, and we already have some of our pets that have become neighborhood pets already within the community. So there's definitely pros with having them around in each neighborhood.
And then what do you have for medical, physical therapy, nursing services? How do you integrate that?
Yes, we also have assisted living within our community, which brings a clinical component within the within our area. So we have on the floor concierge physicians. We have physical therapy within our community. We have licensed nurses around the clock for emergencies for our residents. And we also have caregivers. We try to provide an all-inclusive lifestyle. We have dentists, dermatology, nail salons. We try to think everything a senior will go out for and make that appointment for. We try to bring into the community.
How many people can live there if you're at 100%?
No problem. We have 258 apartments with max of 289 residents.
And how occupied are you right now?
Currently, with us being open just 90 days, we have 62 residents within our community, and we are welcoming more each month.
And how's the market for that? I mean, we're all aging, so I presume there's an endless supply of people who are going to age into a place like yours. But how do you get the word out? How do you compete with other people? What kind of advertising do you do?
Well, we started about a year ago in pre-leasing and really ensured that we were connected with the community. As around us in our market studies, we were able to see that we have aging seniors in Portage Park that would need services. So we started with local, digital, and newspaper advertising. And we also went into website advertising as well. And we have been able to partner with some great hospitals and some great luxury communities and Chamber of Commerce is where we've been able to attract the right clientele.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense that the clients, the people that are going to live there, probably prior to living in your place, were living in the area, right? I mean, that's where their friends are, their family is, the business is, so they want to stay local, right?
Exactly, John. Majority of our move-ins have been from, they were either raised their family in the Portage Park area, or their sons and daughters live in the Portage Park area currently, and they are not ready to leave that city life, and they want to bring their parents closer to them for easy access. So we have a huge influx of move-ins from the Portage Park area because family members live in this area.
So are these like condominiums? Do I own that unit and then sell it afterwards? Or just as long as I live there, I essentially pay rent?
Correct. Great question, John. We are a rental. That's how we stand out between our competitors. We're basically a month-to-month rental, and we offer one-bedroom, two-bedrooms. And we also have studios as well.
And I presume that the one, two-bedroom, and studio pricing is also somewhat predicated on the amount of services or meal programs that you sign up for?
Correct. Depending on if that resident is moving into independent living, assisted living, or memory care, they may need increased needs. So that affects the pricing.
And what's the range on something like this? For I understand it's all across the map, but how low can it be? How high does it get? Can you just comment on that generally?
Sure, definitely. Where our independent living starts at $3,295, and that is our independent living apartments. We have assisted living as well, starting at $6,195, and we have memory care starting at $7,995.
Sure. $6,195, $3,295, that's $3,295 a month. And
correct.
Then does that include the meal service as well?
It does. It includes that all-inclusive lifestyle. So that includes your utilities, your food, transportation to local shopping and medical appointments, a social calendar, activity social calendar, where we are taking our residents downtown to local museums. It is a full, all-inclusive community.
Clarendon Six Corners is an addition to the historic Six Corners area. And Amelia Howard is the executive director there. You can click on Clarendon Six Corners, S-I-X, Clarendon. No, am I saying that right? Clarendale.
No, Clarendale.
Clarendale, sixcorners.com. Okay, Amelia, good luck to you and everyone there. Thanks for giving us your time.
No problem. Thank you so very much.
On WGN, more business news with Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A lot of third quarter earnings reports out today, and a lot of them exceed expectations. Among them, agribusiness giant Archer Daniels Midland, with offices in Chicago and Decatur. On a per share basis, ADM had a profit of $1.52 and a third quarter net income of $821 million. Glenview-based Illinois Tool Works also beat expectations, with a per-share net income of $2.55, posting third-quarter revenue at just over $4 billion. A new five-year contract extension has been reached between the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council and the Mid-America Regional Bargaining Association. It includes record increases in wages, health care, and pension benefits over a five-year period. And the U.S. Labor Bureau says the price of Halloween candy is up 13% over last year. That's due to the rising cost of ingredients and labor. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Business of Food Time. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm just looking at the calendar, and we are three quarters of the way through National Pizza Month.
Pizza, pizza.
Which, when you think about it, is just a delivery device for melted cheese. And that takes us to Plymouth, Wisconsin, home of Sargento, the big cheese company that's celebrating its 70th anniversary this year.
And it was founded by Leonard Gentine.
More about Sargento after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. It's Truck Month. Put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, Sargento, still based where it started 70 years ago in Plymouth, a town of about 9,000 an hour north of Milwaukee, now a $1.8 billion company.
It's a family-owned company. We're in our third generation.
That's Christy Jankowski.
And I'm the EVP of Innovation.
And innovation in packaging cheese is how it all started for Leonard Gentine in 1953.
He wanted to be able to take natural cheese and put it in packaging that would have a longer shelf life than what was available at the time.
And that name, Sargento?
The Gentine and the Sartori families, together they started Sargento. The Sartoris ultimately left the Sargento company, and the Gentine family continued on.
And the company now has four cheese plants. It's a big employer in the Badger State.
Almost 2,500 strong now.
So what are the keys to success and longevity?
The tag of the company is hire good people and treat them like family. And it sounds like a tag, but it's actually the philosophy that we've lived by for the last 70 years.
And not a lot of turnover.
We've got some employees that have been working for Sargento for 50 years. And we've got some families where we would have four generations that have worked within the Sargento family.
Now, if you're thinking that working in cheese would be a good job.
We are certainly hiring.
And?
We will reimburse for associate degrees, bachelor degrees, master's, even law degrees.
You know, I like your street address in Plymouth.
1%. persnickety place. I love that you noticed that. We are very persnickety people. We take great pride in our products.
Sargento is a persnickety billion-dollar family-owned company celebrating 70 years in business. From the farm to your belly, it's National Bologna Day. It's also, well, it's everything, National Food Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Let's talk a little bit about interest rates right now. Ted Rossman is a senior industry analyst at Bankrate. Hi, Ted. Welcome back.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I know that you and I should be talking about retail credit card interest rates, and we will. Do you have anything to say in general about the 10-year rate as well, going above 5% for the first time in a very long time?
Yeah, it's having big effects on a lot of financial products. Mortgage rates, probably chief among them. The fact that mortgage rates are knocking on the door of 8% for really the first time in about a quarter century. Our latest sweep last Wednesday was at 7.99% for the national average on the 30-year fixed. Good chance that we'll pass that this week. I think this whole higher for longer mantra from the Fed is really what's most significant for housing and for other products. We don't expect rates to come down meaningfully anytime soon, which is tough for borrowers, although the silver lining is for savers who can get over 5% now on a federally insured liquid savings account.
Doesn't help the national debt, though, does it?
No, that's true. Uncle Sam's borrowing costs are definitely very expensive. And, you know, there are a number of reasons for this. I mean, certainly what the Fed's been doing to fight inflation. But I think actually a lot of the dysfunction in Washington could be part of this as well. Just when you think about potential government shutdown and kind of gridlock and also the fact that the Treasury had to do a whole bunch of borrowing after delaying last time because of the whole debt ceiling snafu. So I think that feeds into it. But, you know, more than anything, I think higher for longer is the most likely scenario.
So talk about retail credit cards then. What happens there?
Really high interest rates there. Yeah, the average retail branded credit card charges about 29%, which is a record high. That's about 8 points higher than the average general purpose credit card. So it kind of goes from bad to worse. I mean, the advice certainly is pay in full if you can. Take out a 0% balance transfer offer if you need some more time. But we do this retail card study leading into the holiday season just to raise awareness that if you get offered one of these at the checkout counter, tread very carefully, particularly if you're going to carry a balance. If you can pay in full and get the rewards, maybe that works out. But don't use this as a financing tool, if at all possible.
Well, you know what they do when you're running up at the register there and they say, do you have a card? And you say, no, I don't. And they say, well, we'll take 25% off this purchase and or something like that. You go, well, hell, I'll go ahead and put it on the card, open up an account. I'm going to save $30 on this purchase, whatever you're buying. And now you are in their loop. Those store cards are as high as the bank cards?
Store cards tend to be even higher. Yeah, the average is about 8 points higher. Some of them are over 30%. The highest we found was 33.24%. A few retailers charge that, including Good Sam and Michaels and a couple of others. And yeah, just astronomically high rates. To that point about the pressure at the checkout counter, I hear sometimes from people who didn't even realize they were signing up for a credit card. They just heard the, do you want to save 20% off? And they fell for the pitch. Maybe they thought it was a store loyalty program or, you know, people get rushed and it gets confusing and busy around the holidays. That's where I say it's totally fine to decline politely or, you know, maybe say I'll think about it. The only time this works, really two times. One would be if you pay in full and you're loyal to the store and you get 5% back every time you shop at Amazon or Target or Best Buy with their credit card. The other one is a nice discount off a big initial purchase, again, that you can pay in full. So I know some people that have saved $1,000 on appliances because they got the store credit card, but the key is to pay it off.
One last quick question. How do we get to 30% or even 25%? I mean, none of the numbers that we talk about are anywhere near there. So how is it that the reasonable cost for these stores or these banks, how is it that a reasonable expense for them is to charge us 30% on debt?
It's a combination of the Fed pushing rates higher, but also the fact that store cards were starting from a higher point, largely because these cards are easier to get. They're not as selective about credit quality, so they charge higher interest rates as part of that. But these are huge profit centers. I mean, Macy's reportedly makes about half of its total profit from its credit card.
Wow. But are you also saying, though, that I'm somewhat underwriting people who are credit risks and might not pay their bill? Somebody's got to pay the bill. I'm paying their bill. Is that true?
If you carry a balance, yes. What's notable there is that a lot of these store cards don't even have a range. A lot of times general purpose cards have a range according to creditworthiness, but many store cards, it's the same high rate if you carry a balance. Doesn't matter if you have excellent or fair credit.
Hmm. Ted Rossman, senior industry analyst at Bankrate. Now, they've got some good ideas and some good warning signs for you if you just click on Bankrate.com. Okay, Ted, thanks for your time today.
Of course. Thank you.